Good morning. We have a few announcements today. This week's offering will go to the Pewaukee Food Pantry. Any loose change, bills, or checks with the Pewaukee Food Pantry in the memo line will go to the organization. Gus asks that you consider joining the choir. Choir practice is every Sunday at 9:15 a.m., and the next choir practice is Thursday, September 19th at 7:15 p.m., and choir practice on Thursdays will be held twice a month. See Gus for the schedule. Also, we still have 3 mowing slots open this month. Your opportunity to get out on the lawnmower and have some fun. Your help is very much needed. Sign-up sheet is in the social hall or see John Kuhn. Today's order of service includes announcements of upcoming LCUUC activities and events, and everyone is welcome to attend. LCUUC is a UUA-affirmed welcoming congregation, and it doesn't matter who you love or how you present gender. This is something we repeat every Sunday because it's basic to who we are. All of us, each and every one, are welcome here. Now, please take a moment at this point to silence your all electronics you may have here with you today as we begin our service. Thank you.
Good morning. The group you see up here, if you don't already know, is Kellswater Bridge, and we're glad to be here providing some music for you today. Today's service is about labor, being Labor Day, so we have a number of songs about labor, mostly because we're a Celtic band in labor from the United Kingdom, but there's obviously crossover to the United States, and all the trials and tribulations of the labor parties and the workers. The song we're going to start with is called Pound a Week Rise. And what you need to know first off is that in the UK, they use the term rise the way we would use the term raise. So a pay raise is a pay rise in the UK. So these workers are working for a pound a week raise in our terminology. This song is a loose reference to the unofficial UK coal miners' strike of 1969 that involved the chair of the National Coal Board, Alf Robins. So he was a government figure, and he was the bad guy. So if you feel the need to say boo when you hear the name Robins, feel free. This is audience participation. All right. The other things you need to know about the end of the song has to do with currency in the UK, which maybe some of you already know because you're all smart people, but I didn't know, so what does that tell you? A pound is about a dollar, so they were working for about a dollar a week raise. 10 bob is half a pound, and 7 and 6 is a colloquial term for 27 shillings and 6 pence, which is about a third of a pound. All right.
Come all you colliers that work down the mine, from Scotland to South Wales, from Teesdale to Tyne, I'll sing you a song of a pound a week rise. And the men who were fooled by the government's lies, and it's down you go, down below, Jack, where you'll never see the sky, and you're working in a dungeon for a pound a week rise. In 1960, just a few years ago, the mine workers' leaders to Lord Robins did go, saying we work very hard, every day we risk
this guy no working in a dungeon for a pound crime.
Recognition of Labor Sunday and Labor Day, we light this flame to honor all work, including the work of our hands and our backs, and gratitude for all the laborers that support our world and for all those who boldly continue the work of justice, equity, and peace. Please rise in body or spirit and join in singing our opening hymn, number 347, Gather the Spirit in the Gray Hymnal.
Good morning. Today is Labor Sunday, first established by the American Federation of Labor in 1909. It was meant to be a day for churches to pray for workers and to raise congregations' awareness of issues of injustice surrounding workers' rights and wages. Labor Sunday has largely been forgotten, except by UCC, the United Church of Christ, the church of Reverend James Olson, who was here 2 weeks ago. The United Church of Christ website says, quote, "The Sunday of Labor Day weekend is Labor Sunday, a day fit to lift up workers, celebrate their contributions, and support their struggles. It is also a day to commit ourselves to improving jobs so that all workers have wages, benefits, and work hours that allow them to be self-sufficient and live lives of wholeness," end quote. Certainly, we UUs stand in solidarity with those words. So come, let us celebrate the gifts of workers. Let us galvanize our outrage that there are always the exploitables. Let us find community and comfort in the values to which we covenant. Come, let us worship together. Please take a moment to greet each other, say hello, introduce yourself to the people around you this morning.
Welcome to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. My name is Lois Romikas, and I'm the worship associate for this morning's service. Somehow, Labor Day tends to bring me back to Bruce Springsteen, who, for me, sang eloquently about working people. As he says in my hometown, "Now Main Street's whitewashed windows and vacant stores seems like there ain't nobody wants to come down here no more. They're closing down the textile mill across the railroad tracks. Foreman says these jobs are going, boys, and they ain't coming back to your hometown." Personally, I think this reflects some of what's happened in our country, around the country, and certainly in many of our small towns as we've seen them sort of shuttered as a factory closes down. And we're even seeing it in our small towns in Wisconsin with our farmers. So in today's gig economy and on this Labor Sunday, let's remember to stand with those who fight for economic self-sufficiency. The gig economy just isn't making it for us. We need to fight for fair wages and hourly wages and benefits. But right now, I'm just glad to see all of your faces this morning. We're glad that you're here with us today and that you've chosen to join us for worship and community. If you brought food items with you, please bring them down now or during the offertory. And did you know that Labor Day has sort of a backstory to it? So I invite anyone of any age to come down and hear about sort of the backstory of Labor Day. And I even have some props. So come on, don't be shy. There's adults of all, you know, everybody's got that child in them that wants to come out and play. Play. So had we not had musicians, I probably would have set up my railroad. But I couldn't do that because we had lots of things going. So we're just going to kind of pretend here with some rail cars. Because the backstory of Labor Day is all about the railroad. So, most of us, what do we think Labor Day is? Last day of summer. Any other worker? Yep. So, but it actually comes from a time when the government and workers were fighting. It all started back in the early 1890s, so a long time ago, where there was a bad recession or a time when our economy was going poorly. And it reduced the demand for rail cars. So there was a very, very rich railroad man named George Pullman, who lived on the south side of Chicago. And he decided to lay off some of his workers. Now, Pullman was a creative rich man, and this may sound familiar. He created his own small city on the south side of Chicago, where the workers could not only work for him, but they had the privilege of living in his housing and buying from his stores. What a perfect capitalist society. And so when he laid off his workers, guess what? They were still living in his houses. They were still going to his store. So he still got the money. And he, you know, and his workers became in debt to him. So what would happen? I would get pretty angry, and as you can imagine, so did his workers. So they went on strike in May of 1894. And he was, just like I said, a huge creator of railroad cars. So many of the sympathetic American Railway Union also, who handled the Pullman cars on the railroads as they went across the United States. Yes, we can try to pull this along, but since I don't have it hooked up here, but anyways, they refused to handle them. So what they did is they started taking Pullman cars just off the tracks. Nope, we're not going to handle those. The rest of the train could go, but no Pullman cars. So from Detroit west, a quarter of a million workers, 250,000 people, went on strike. If you can imagine, that was a lot of workers back in those days, and they didn't quite have the email system we have now to communicate all this. 27 states were affected by the strike. The strike went on from May to June. And as a historian said, David Ray Pepke, the boycott tapped the deep and pervasive feelings of labor in general. Workers were mad about their situation. They were angry about their limited opportunities and what they took to be the mean and arbitrary treatment or unfair treatment that they received from distant owners of the industries in which we worked. Think about that. The strike continued from May and June, as I said, and then suddenly in July of 1894, our president at the time, Grover Cleveland, sent in federal troops to the Pullman area of Chicago to stop the strike. Now, the Illinois governor said, you know, we don't need your troops. There's no been major rioting. You know, things are pretty calm here. We don't need your troops. Please do not send in your troops. But, you know, presidents being presidents, he sent in the troops. Well, of course, what happens? You got the troops on one side, you got the strikers on the other side, and pretty soon they're fighting. So the troops cracked down with bayonets and bullets. The rioting and property kept destructing. And, you know, have many people were hurt, and dozens of people died in this strike. And it took until fall for the government to restore order. And, you know, a number of people went to the jail. Of course, they were all union workers. So during the strike, this is the interesting part. At the same time the strike was going on that summer, in 1894, the U.S. Congress, in all their wisdom, passed legislation making the first Monday of September a day to recognize workers. Interesting. Such a holiday had already been the demand of the labor movement. And, you know, there was a lot of things in the press back in then days that was there to appease the workers, you know, by setting up this holiday. And it does seem a little bit interesting that there was this huge strike going on around the country and they set up this holiday. And the U.S. Department of Labor notes that the holiday, quote unquote, is a creation of the labor movement and is dedicated to the social and economic achievements of American workers. Strangely enough, it doesn't mention the famous Pullman strike or all the workers killed or hurt in these strikes for better wages and working conditions. And I would recommend, since I lived in Chicago for years, going down to the Pullman neighborhood. It is a National Historic District on the far side, south side of Chicago, and you can really kind of get immersed in what it was like to not only work in the factory, but have those working conditions and everything. So what this reflects is that throughout our history, workers have had to fight to get better pay, shorter hours, evenings and weekends that weren't just handed over to lawmakers and so-called benevolent managers. We may think of Labor Day as an end of the summer, three-day wonderful weekend, and the beginning of the school year, but really we should stop and reflect on the workers in this country, all the people, on labor, on the movement, the union movement, and on economic inequality. Thanks a lot for listening to my story today. I'm going to take my chair. Thank you. Great.
When I found these words by Kristen Collins, "We Give," I thought, oh, these are so perfect for our offering words. And I hope you think so too, because I think they really fit with how we feel about this weekly ritual of our offering. We give to remind ourselves how many gifts we have to offer. We give to remember that we are part of something bigger than ourselves. We give because we believe in music and sacred space. We give with the faith that together we are enough. This morning's offering we're sharing with the Pewaukee Food Pantry and loose change and checks with food pantry in the memo line will go there. The morning offering will now be given and received.
Our next number is a song called Pastures of Plenty, which was written by Woody Guthrie, the great Woody Guthrie, in 1941. And it's about the migrant workers in North America and what they experienced.
It's a mighty hard road that my poor hands have hoed. My poor feet feet have traveled a hot, dusty road. Out of your dust bowl and westward we rolled. Your deserts were hot and your mountains so cold. I worked in your orchards of peaches and prunes. I slept on the ground in the light of your moon. On the edge of the city you'll see us, and then we come with the dust and we go with the wind. I harvest your crops. Well, it's north up to Oregon to gather your hops. Dig the beets from your ground, cut the grapes from your vine to set on your table your light, sparkling wine. From dry desert ground, from the Grand Coulee Dam where the waters run down. Every state in the Union us migrants have been, we'll work in this fight and we'll fight till we win. My pastures of plenty must always be free.
Thank you for these gifts given and received for the work of this community. As a community of human hands and human hearts, this is the time in our service where we come together to bear witness to one another's lives. Before the service, you're always welcome to silently light a candle on the candle table. But during the service, we speak aloud and the worship associate lights candles for us. If you'd like to share a joy or need us to be with you in holding a concern, please raise your hand and the ushers will bring you a microphone.
Sarah, this is a joy. Light a candle, please, of joy that Bud did so well with his emergency operation 3 weeks ago today. He does not have a gallbladder, and he's really doing well.
This is Jerry. Would you please light a candle, not of concern, but of disgust? We've had yet another mass shooting in this country, resulting in more deaths, more woundings. And our politicians, are unwilling or unable to get their act together and do something about it. What's especially disgusting is that in 1996, Australia solved the problem. Since 96, in this country, we've had almost 100 mass shootings, almost 1,000 dead, and over 2,000 wounded. Australia, zero. You want to find out what they did, get out your Googler and Google Australian gun laws, find out what they did, and share what you find out with your elected representatives and congressmen in Congress and the legislature.
Hi, this is Bard. I have two concerns. My brother had surgery for throat cancer, and the first findings were good, but now we found out it's in his lymph, and he'll have to have chemo and radiation, and I ask your thoughts and prayers. The second one is, for some reason, the thought has been come to me really strong this last week to have us saying that maybe we could put on t-shirts or something to say, make America kind again.
And this is Jim, a candle of joy that Diane McBain is still responding well to the chemotherapy, and a candle of concern because she's feeling she's been forgotten by the congregation. So if you have the time, perhaps a phone call.
And we light the last candle for those joys and sorrows which we hold deeply but which have not been named here today.
The video that we are about to watch is of Hector Figueroa receiving the 2018 North Star Award. Hector Figueroa died suddenly of a heart attack on this past July 11. And here are excerpts from his obituary in the New York Times. Hector Figueroa, who as president of one of the country's most influential labor unions, led successful campaigns for better pay and working conditions for thousands of low-wage workers, died on Thursday at his home in Jackson Heights, Queens. He was 57. Mr. Figueroa was president of 32BJ, a New York local of the Service Employees International Union that represents more than 170,000 building cleaners, security guards, doormen, and airport workers. In the 7 years since he was first elected to lead the local, it added about 50,000 members and built its political clout. Mr. Figueroa supported the grassroots efforts by fast food workers in New York that grew into a nationwide campaign for higher minimum wage known as the Fight for 15. In a recent interview with the New York Times, Mr. Figueroa said the union's message to fast food change was that, quote, the industry as a whole is not meeting the needs of its workers by fundamentally basing their model on the poverty of the working people, end quote. With the demeanor of a college professor, he guided airport workers both in brief picket lines and in drawn-out protest campaigns. Last year, those efforts yielded a resolution from the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey to raise the minimum wage to $19 an hour for about 40,000 workers at the three main airports serving New York City. Hector Jose Figueroa was born on April 3, 1962, in Ponce, Puerto Rico. His parents, Luis and Castita, were both educators. His father was a school principal, his mother a teacher and a principal. After receiving a bachelor's degree in economics from New York University, Figueroa went on to study economics at the New School for Social Research in Manhattan.
Kind introduction, and thank you, North Star, for this honor. And realmente no es para mí, es para nuestra familia en la 32BJ and 32BJ. Our members are cleaners, security officers, door people, and also airport workers, theater workers. They are where you live. They are where you work. They are where you root for your teams, whether they are the Mets or the Yankees or the Knicks or the Nets. And they are there, too, when you are trying to get your kids through school. They're in the public school system, too. On behalf of our 163,000 members across 11 states, I want to tell you that it's a true great honor to be here with you. I want to congratulate North Star, Jennifer, Nisha, the entire board, for the work that you do, all those of you who support this important institution. I want to congratulate Christina, Stephen, the Brooklyn Movement, and the No One Leaves Mid Hudson Valley. It's a great company to be in because our union is committed, as Jean said, to the fight for social justice. Yes, we have been there to make sure that New York has the kind of police reform that is needed to protect our members and our people of color. Yes, we have been there fighting for Dreamers and for our own members that today are facing the greatest threat to them and their families from this administration. And we have fought for them, for Francisco, for Yahaira, for countless others, and we will not rest until we win the fight so undocumented workers can be here and treated with the dignity, respect, and rights that they have earned through their hard work. And yes, we have been there raising the minimum wage to $15 an hour, and in the case of airport workers who have been the subject of so much abuse over the years, to $19 an hour. And yes, we've been there protecting the rights of our LGBTQI members and all members. And we come to you after having settled a contract for 31,000 property service workers last Friday that work in buildings where 1.5 million New Yorkers live and call home, and now under that contract, we have Me Too language and more protection for immigrant workers than we've ever had in the history of our union. Because we need to stop harassment on the job, and that's something that we want to make sure happens in our industry, that it comes to an end as well. as in our society. So we share a lot in common. And with North Star, I like to say we have crossed paths many times. There are countless numbers of organizations that 32BJ has been working on, many of these issues and others, that have been funded from the very beginning by North Star. And I want to make something very clear today. We are in a difficult period for all of us in the movement for social and economic justice. We are in a very challenging time. The threats that we face are really real, and they are absolutely horrendous, what we face every day. But it's also a time that offers great opportunity for us to grow and win. When I saw our brothers and sisters from Brooklyn and from the Hudson Valley, I am so inspired by all of you, because I know that wherever we are and whatever views we hold, we are together, one family, one movement, one community, and it is in people like you that we can restore what the American dream is supposed to be about, something that everyone has a place and everyone is respected. Now, I also know that out there is very complicated. The game for us to win against the Trump administration and to win for economic and social justice is complicated. Life is complicated. Sometimes we're going to make decisions as part of a big, broad family that may be different from what other members of the family make. But I want to make clear something here today, as I'm here with you, with you all, are my brothers and sisters. Our union is committed like never before to not only support North Star in funding organizations that fight for the issues that affect our members and our communities, but for our union to continue supporting every single group that is out there fighting for the things that we believe in, and nothing and no political position or ideas or strategies or tactics are ever going to go and build a gap between us and the people that we support and respect. So to all the brothers and sisters in the movement out there, 32BJ is with you. We're going to continue to support you. We're going to continue to fight together. We're going to continue to fund you when that is the ask. And we're going to continue to fight with you on the streets, organizing wherever we need to, so we can win and get to that place that we can call justice. Make no mistake. So whatever you read, whatever you hear, talk to our members. Talk to that doorman. Talk to that door woman. Talk to that security officer. Talk to that cleaner and ask them, what do you stand for? And they're going to tell you, we stand for making sure that all families are included, that my family can have a good paycheck, but also that all families can have a decent life in this society. So thank you, North Star. I'm really, really glad that we were able to have this conversation today. I had some remarks prepared, and I didn't follow any of them because I want to talk to you from my heart. Es el momento de luchar. Es el momento de organizar. So if you believe in justice, stand up. If you believe we can win, stand up. And please follow me in saying what fast food workers have been saying as they've been fighting all around the country to win the union. Okay? Stand up for a second. Now, I'm going to say these words. You repeat them with me. I believe.
I believe.
I believe that.
I believe that we can win.
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 We believe that we can win.
We believe that we can win. Se puede? Se puede? Sí se puede. Sí se puede. Si se puede, 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 si se puede. Thank you very much. God bless you.
Please rise in body or spirit and join in singing number 113 in the gray hymnal, Where is Our Holy Church? Us into our time of centering on this Labor Sunday, we will use a meditation blessing the hands from the National Farm Worker Ministry. Perhaps you would join with your hands. Bless the hands of the people of the earth, the hands that plant the seed, the hands that bind the harvest, the hands that carry the burden of life. Soften the hands of the oppressor and strengthen the hands of the oppressed. Bless the hands of the workers. Bless the hands of those in power above them, that the measure they deal will be tempered with justice and compassion. Amen. Please join me in 2 minutes of silent thought, meditation, or prayer.
The reading today appeared as an opinion column in the New York Times this summer. It's called "The Tech Industry is Building a Vast Digital Underclass" by Fahad Manchu, or I believe that's how you pronounce his name. DoorDash is the most popular food delivery service in the country, a freakishly fast-growing unicorn valued at $7 billion just 6 years after its founding, backed by some of Silicon Valley's and Saudi Arabia's leading investors. I'll slinkingly confess that it is also a provider of my lunch 2 or 3 or 5 times a month, depending on how lazy and nihilistic I happen to be feeling about leaving the house. In Silicon Valley, you don't get very far without accidentally creating a permanent digital underclass. And so it probably shouldn't surprise you to learn that DoorDash has long maintained a compensation policy for its workers that looks pretty much like outright theft of their tips. The policy, which has been in effect since 2017 and has frequently inspired small uproars on social media, went viral again this weekend after Andy Newman, a New York Times reporter, detailed in a brilliantly dystopian article his nightmare stint as a New York City food app delivery man. And for those of you who didn't read the article, I say go read it. It's really interesting. Only then, finally, did DoorDash kill it. Mr. Newman explained that on his very first order, DoorDash offered him a guaranteed minimum payment of $6.85. His customer tipped $3, but Newman still got $6.85, not $9.85, because DoorDash uses customers' tips to pad its guaranteed payout. If a customer had tipped nothing, Mr. Newman wrote, he would have paid me the full $6.85. Because she tipped $3, DoorDash kicked only $3.85. She was saving DoorDash $3 by not tipping me. To anyone with sense and reason, this is outright tip theft. Yet DoorDash has been gaslighting workers and the media with the argument that its unfair policy was actually the most equitable and economically optimal model. I got the impression that the company was implying its workers preferred this injustice. They were single moms and college students who valued the flexibility and character-building precariousness of their gig worker status, much more than that trifling elite concerns such as getting the full amount of money customers intended them to have. After long defending the policy, Tony Zhu, the chief executive of DoorDash, finally threw in the towel on Tuesday evening. He promised in a series of tweets to put in place a new pay model soon to ensure that workers would get the full amount that customers tipped them. He said, "We made the decision today that we've got to strike a better balance. The company's reversal is welcome. And yet the fact that the tipping policy persisted at DoorDash for so long and the company so ardently defended it in the face of waves of online outrage and depended on its defense, the fact that most consumers and many workers didn't quite understand the policy only lays bare how shaky and capricious the entire digital economy is for its workers. But what worries me the most is that this is just the beginning. The software-driven policies of exploitation and servility will metastasize across the economic value chain. Taking DoorDash workers' tips today will pave the way for taking advantage of everyone else tomorrow. But what's to stop it? The real scandal of DoorDash's pay scandal is that the company stuck with it for so long, despite its unfairness. The company was betting that it would just blow over, because such things usually do. The instinct was probably correct. The rules of digital society won't be much different from the rules of analog society. Working people get shafted. So I just thought that I'd read to you what the new DoorDash policy came out. I found this in a New York Times article, you know, somewhere in the last couple of weeks. So according to Mr. Zhu, the chief executive officer, there's going to be greater visibility in the earnings. He says, if there are two orders and Dasher A had a $3 tip and Dasher, oh, sorry, wrong section here. Under the new policy, DoorDash is increasing its base pay from $1 per order to at least $2, and more often, based on variables like distance, it will run more promotions where workers can make even more during certain hours. Mr. Zhu said that before accepting or rejecting an order, now a Dasher will be shown the full amount that they can expect of the payout. Their base pay, their bonus pay, and any tip that the customer added at checkout, as well as the pickup and delivery location. So we hope it's better. Here ends the reading.
Lois was just talking about something very modern. And we're going to go way back about 150 years now to the UK. And what are the results for workers when things go poorly? And so the song, as you can see, is The Four Loom Weaver. And a four loom weaver would have been a very wealthy craftsman at the top of his game, because he could manage four cotton looms in a Lancashire weaving shed in Britain all at the same time. This weaver in the song, however, was reduced to eating nettles. Has anyone ever eaten nettles? I know some of us use stinging nettle for as a herbal cure, but I don't know if I'd want to eat them as my food source. And also they ate Waterloo porridge, which was just a handful of oats and a huge pot of water, so there was hardly any food in there. And this song takes place during the cotton famine in Britain of 1861 through 1865, which, if you think of those dates, that was a direct result of the American Civil War.
Old Billy at Bent, he kept telling me wrong. We might have better times if I'd but held my tongue. I've been holding my tongue till I near lost my breath. And I feel in my heart that I'll soon starve to death. I'm a four-loom weaver, as many a one knows. I've not to eat, and I've wore out my clothes. My claws are both broken, and stockings I've none. You'd hardly give me tuppence for all I've got on.
was the last. We tarried and shifted till now we're quite fast. We lived upon nettles while nettles were good, and Waterloo porridge were the best of our food. I'm a four-loom weaver, as many a one knows. I've not to eat, and I've wore out my clothes. My clogs are both broken, and stockings I've done. You'd hardly give me tuppence for all I've got on.
When we take fire from our chalice, it does not become less, it becomes more. And so we extinguish our chalice, but we take its light and warmth with us, multiplying their power by all of our lives and sharing it with the world. Please rise in body or spirit and join in singing our closing hymn this week, Solidarity Forever, and the words are written in your order of service.
Mistakes on here. They're very minor. On the first page, is this on?
No. John?
Could I have a microphone? Thank you. All right. The very first line says solidarity forever, and then the word lyrics follows that. The word lyrics is not supposed to be there, so don't sing that. Okay. Anyway, this is clearly the battle hymn of the Republic is the melody. And then on the last page where it says solidarity forever at the bottom, the chorus comes in again. The words for the union makes us strong should have been put there. Okay, so just, excuse me, sing those two at the very end of the hymn. All right, and sing this with gusto. On earth is weaker than the feeble strength of one, but the union makes us strong. Solidarity forever, solidarity forever, solidarity forever, for the union makes us strong. It is we who plowed the prairies, built the cities where they trade, dug the mines and built the workshops, endless miles of railroad lay. Now we stand outcast and starving mid the wonders we have made, but the union makes us strong. Solidarity forever, solidarity forever, solidarity forever, for the union makes us strong. They have taken untold millions at never toiled to earn, but without our brain and muscle, not a single wheel can turn. We can break their haughty power, gain our freedom when we learn that the union makes us strong. Solidarity forever, solidarity forever, solidarity forever, for the union makes us strong. A power greater than their hoarded gold, greater than the might of atoms magnified a thousandfold. We can bring to birth a new world from the ashes of the old, for the union makes us strong. Solidarity forever, solidarity forever, solidarity
are the salt of the earth, and you bring light to the world. You are not too young or too old. You are not too rich or too needy to bring good news to the impoverished, to give a hand to the brokenhearted, to live out freedom and pardon through the gifts you have been given. So remember to pack peace in your toolbox, hope in your briefcase, love in your lunchbox, and may integrity, honesty, and joy be your designer wear of choice. Se si puede. Thank you.
Thank you.